I'd like now to welcome Joe Brewster. He's co-director of the documentary American Promise, which opens today at the CCA here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Wonderful being here.
So this is an extraordinary film. It's made over the course of 13 years, and it documents the lives of two boys, your son Idris and his good friend, as they go from kindergarten through 12th grade. What were your intentions when you began this film, and did they shift over the years?
The answer to the second question is a much easier answer, and that is yes. We began this film in 1999. We were filmmakers. We wanted to go somewhere where we haven't been before and where the audience hasn't seen. And so Independent School is that place. We were recruited by the Dalton School, an extremely rigorous independent school in New York City. And part of that recruitment meant for us that they were going to bring in people of color into the school, and that school was going to mirror the city of New York. That was an amazing opportunity for us, our son, and for us as filmmakers. So we recruited a third of that class, five young men and women, age 4 to 5, three girls and two boys, and we began to document that experience. It was called the Dalton Experience. It was an exploration and a celebration of diversity. Over the next 2 or 3 years, the girls dropped out of the project, deciding it was uncomfortable for them. And so we were left with two boys, both African-American boys, and the project changed in intensity and scope.
It's very interesting to see this previously all-white school, Dalton, making an effort and making, I think, a sincere and honest effort to have a mixed-race student body and honestly talking about what some of their shortcomings are and not knowing quite how to solve some of the problems that their students are having. How do you think that Dalton is doing in terms of understanding and educating black students?
Well, better than most. You know, it's easy to point the finger at Dalton. They've allowed it. It is easy to point the finger at us as parents because we've allowed you to see 13, 14 years of our life and many of the mistakes that we made in rearing our sons. But it's incredibly difficult to have that conversation. And I think Dalton did it initially with the enthusiasm and the feeling that it was going to be a less difficult transformation. It was difficult, but I think what they succeeded in doing is being a role model for others. I think one clear outcome is the understanding that diversity is not enough, that academic excellence is not enough, that if we want to level the playing field for boys, in particular boys of color, in this particular documentary, African-American boys, we have to be as concerned about their social-emotional growth, their moral development, as well as their academic development. I think they all must proceed at the same rate.
Both of these boys, your son and his friend Shane, are extraordinarily bright, lovely, self-aware children, as we see in this film and over the course of their growing up. And yet these difficulties arise. How do you understand those difficulties? I mean, these kids are fantastic. Their school is a great school that's making efforts. And you're talking about the social and emotional needs. Can you describe more specifically what the disconnect might have been?
Well, I think that most people have a difficult time talking about race. The assumption is that if you can control for class, that the more money you make and the more resources you give these kids, the better they'll do. That is true up to a point. But race is inextricably linked to these kids' success. And the ability to talk about it and work that through helps. Now, I'm going to step back a second to say that there is something we called implicit bias. Implicit bias are perceptions and projections that we have that really happen on a split second, and they're based on history or a perceived history. And the history and relationship that we've had with African-American men has been difficult. And these kinds of stereotypes and assumptions kick in before the teacher has an opportunity to think about it, before other parents have an opportunity to think about it. And these kinds of negative assumptions about these boys are things that we share, even as African-American parents. In order to prevent them from taking hold or having an impact, things like you can't do it, you can't do math, that you're fidgety, that you're angry, that you're impulsive, you have to have a deep discussion. You have to refuse and reject those assumptions. And these kids are not able to do this. You know, my son at age 4 came back and said, you know, Dad, they keep asking me, am I rich, am I poor? Am I rich, am I poor? I keep telling him I'm in the middle, but they keep asking me. So even at age 4, he is struggling with who he is and who they think he is and having to fight for an accurate perception. And so when the teachers wonder if he has the resources at home, despite his father being a physician and his mother an attorney, he's got to fight for that. And what people also don't understand is that he has to struggle at home when he speaks four-syllable word and is rejected by his teammates on the basketball court. It is a struggle, and it's a struggle that we took on, and we think is an important struggle, but there's a process, and that process is a little more complicated for African-American boys.
It's interesting because in so many ways it mirrors the struggles that a lot of other people have, too. It mirrors the struggles that, for example, nerdy kids have, or that girls have with questions about math. And I have to say, I mean, I identified with your son, Idris, as I was watching the film, because my dad was the son of immigrants, and he was the first person in his family to go to college. And then I had a middle-class childhood with quite a lot of pressure to succeed in school. I'd forgotten how much pressure until I saw this movie and was watching that particular struggle. But whatever the analogies are to other white kids in America, I mean, we get out of school and we blend in, whereas Idris and his cohort, for the rest of their lives, have to negotiate how racist this country is, even after the Civil Rights Movement and Obama and everything. And I was wondering, I mean, you are a psychiatrist. How do you understand the persistence of racism in the United States?
You know, I think that making decisions on race and class and gender and culture will always exist. And the question is, it is part of what we do as human beings, seeking to belong to a group, to fit in, trying to protect ourselves. You know, it's part of a defense mechanism they call projective identification. But what we have to do is learn how to minimize the impact. And part of that is getting to know each other better, so that I don't have to know you based on an assumption. I don't have to know you based on the color of your skin or the amount of money your parents make or your gender. And I think we're doing a much better job in that. And I think younger Americans are less likely to make that assumption and more likely to get to know you. And I think what we're asking people to do at the end of our film is make a commitment to get to know their neighbor better. That's a hard thing to do in big groups. That's something you have to do on a one-on-one basis. What the research shows is that when we get to know our neighbor on a one-to-one basis or in a small group, those negative assumptions, those perceptions and prejudices tend to melt. And so that's what we're about, hopefully with the film, but as a society.
Well, I think the film has tremendous potential for opening just exactly these conversations and getting a conversation about education and parenting and race and all these things going, how do you see the film being used as a tool for activism?
Well, you know, we've identified our activists. It's low-hanging fruit, parents and teachers. And what we're doing is we're asking parents to get more involved in their son's education. We're asking parents to come together in small groups and follow their kids over the course of their education. What we've done is we've created an outreach campaign. It's a campaign that's supported by Kellogg and the Open Society Institute, a campaign in which we've asked parents to come together, not in large groups, but in small groups to follow their kids and their trajectory in school. And where this has happened, these boys tend to thrive. Our goal is to create 300 such clubs around the country. We call them Promise Clubs. The instructions for forming a club in your neighborhood and in your community by going to our website, AmericanPromise.org, and scroll down to resources. We've also been working with teachers. We have a teacher's guide, which was created by Teaching Tolerance. Several school systems have adopted it. These are modules where parents and teachers watch the film, and they come together in small groups to discuss how to better serve the needs of these young men.
You yourself had different challenges from your son Idris when you were growing up. Could you tell us a bit about your own background in education?
Well, I'm from South Central Los Angeles. I'm the first person in my family to graduate from college, and subsequently I graduated from medical school. I'm a physician. My wife is a first-generation college-educated attorney. She's Afro-Caribbean. And so the relationship between school and my family is a lot different from my son. There was always an appreciation from education, but there was never the expectation that I would graduate from college. There was never the expectation that I would go to medical school. There are those expectations for my son. And they were, you know, tremendous. And so I think that that's a bit of a burden for him to some extent. But it is an expectation that he could, that we saw him challenge and actually meet that challenge over the course of 14 years. Not on our schedule, not based on our needs, but on his schedule and based on his capabilities. Our son is now a sophomore at Occidental College in Los Angeles. He is now considering orthopedic surgery as something that he wants to do in sports medicine.
Very interesting. I wonder how he has responded to the film, and also what it's like for him not to, finally after his whole childhood and adolescence, not to have cameras next to him all the time.
Well, you know, his first response after seeing the finished film was that he was disappointed that his basketball prowess was not highlighted. But I think he's quite happy with the film. You know that we shot using a camera approximately 5 hours a month. And that's divided between two families, two schools, and a number of characters who never appeared in the film. So I think the bigger pressure was the pressure to communicate in an honest and transparent manner. Because you can be on camera and really not say anything. And what you'll see when you meet my son and when you see the film, he's incredibly honest and forthright. But this is something that was developed over a long period of time. And this is a trait which is counterintuitive, but it's something he uses to his advantage even today. I know the Summers family. There were two boys. One was our son, Idris Brewster, and Cheyon Summers was the other young boy who started at the Dalton School together. I know that he had a number of obstacles that he had to face in his life. But the parents came to us shortly after the completion of this film, and they said, you know, we believe that this film had an impact on saving our son's life. It transformed the way that we communicated with him, and it transformed the way that we communicated with each other. And I think the guys who really were advantaged by the film were the younger brothers and sisters.
Why is that?
Well, you know, when you're on camera, you have to convince your subject that this is something that's going to benefit them in some way. They develop a sense of trust and acceptance for the camera and for you as a cameraman, and that is a process. It requires not that you convince them that you will show them in a good light, but it requires that you convince them that even a failure, an inability to make the basketball team or a low grade, is not the end of the line. And that's the kind of thinking that these young boys have to have, because success is really not about the failure. It's about the ability to get up from failure and to keep moving forward. And with that level of confidence and that level of trust, they tend to thrive. And what I said earlier was that was a difficult thing to learn when you're the firstborn.
Right.
But I think the secondborn and the thirdborn learn that lesson, and they tend to do a lot better.
Very interesting. Well, the film is called American Promise. It opens today at the CCA in Santa Fe. Joe Brewster is co-director. It's really an extraordinary film for so many different reasons, not only because it was shot over the course of 13 years and you see these young people growing up. And as you say, it's a tremendously honest film. And I also have to commend you and your wife for letting moments show that maybe most parents wouldn't have wanted to show to the world, and yet you do it, and I think it's incredibly valuable to have edited it as you did.
Well, what we like to say is it's about a process. It's a coming-of-age story, but it's not only a coming-of-age of two kids, but it's of parents and parenting. And the mistakes that we make are worth sharing, because we all make those mistakes, and we all can rise above them. And we think this is going to contribute to better parenting, better young boys, and an easing of this academic achievement gap for boys in general, and boys of color specifically.
Well, Joe Brewster, I want to thank you very much for spending this time with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us.
The film opens today at the CCA here in Santa Fe. For more information, ccasantafe.org or 505-982-1338. The website is americanpromise.org. And also there will be a book coming out next month called Promises Kept, which is a follow-up of the documentary American Promise. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.